Why are you pro-choice this hour on Catholic Answers Live? If you are a pro-choice person, we invite your call. And we promise to take it quite seriously and spend some time with you discussing whatever reasons you'd like to share with us. Why are you pro-choice? 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Let me just define pro-choice for you. If you believe that abortion is acceptable at any stage, that'll count as pro-choice because it does count as pro-choice. You might be a person who says, you know, I don't think after the first trimester, it's language sometimes used, or I don't think babies in the, you know, at the time of being born or approaching the time of being born should be aborted. But you do believe in what is called the right to choose. At any stage, you're welcome to call and share your reasons with us. And you're also welcome to call if you are a person who believes abortion anytime on demand. 888-318-7884 is the number. If you're a pro-life person, hold off for another day. Today, we'd like to talk with pro-choice folks. 888-318-7884. I am your host, Cy Kellett. And with me in studio is apologist extraordinaire Trent Horn. Trent has written a book called Persuasive Pro-Life, which covers many of the arguments in favor of being pro-life. And Trent and I would both willingly confess to you that we are pro-life people, but we will, please don't let that dissuade you. As a matter of fact, it might be a good opportunity for you to talk with pro-life people about our views, and we will have a sharing of ideas. Trent's latest book is called Counterfeit Christs, and it's about all the ways Christ is depicted and sometimes embraced in the modern world that don't really have anything to do with the actual Christ who lived, died, and rose from the dead. Again, 888-318-7884, the number if you're a pro-choice person. We'd love to talk with you. Trent Horn, welcome.
Glad to be here, Cy.
We also have the conference this week. It's a big week around here. Are you prepared?
Oh, absolutely. So the conference is the early church was the Catholic Church. And so I'll be speaking about how Protestants understand the church fathers and how sometimes they misinterpret them to try to lessen the amount of Catholic theology that's present in the early church fathers, as well as trying to inject Protestant theology into the fathers when that's not what they were affirming. So that'll be one of the talks I'm giving, lots of other great talks. Still got a few seats left if anyone wants to drive down or maybe quick book a last minute plane ticket to come out here. It'll be a great event.
Again, 888-318-7884, the number here. I guess since we're doing abortion as an issue this hour, I should ask you about this doctor, which has been reported, I have to say, yeah. It has been reported in the major media quite lightly. However, one thinks if the circumstances were different and this were a different person other than an abortion doctor, it might be reported more boldly and maybe people would be less sheltered from the reality. But this Indiana doctor, more than 2,000 remains of fetal human beings found on his property, preserved on his property. What do you make of that?
It's gruesome.
Yeah.
And that makes sense because providing abortions is a gruesome industry. I know that there is kind of a rift among the pro-choice movement between the advocates who just get to go to Washington dinners and lobby, and then those who have to be in the trenches and do the nitty-gritty dirty work of ending the lives of these unborn human beings. And so there are those who are involved and literally get their hands dirty and others who, you know, try to advocate for that. And because it's something that's gruesome you're involved in, if someone's willing to end the lives of these many human beings, it's not they certainly didn't treat these human beings with reverence before they were born. We wouldn't expect that to be after. But it's almost, it's a sign of a gruesome sort of pathology or sickness in this individual's mind, more so to see they would do this. Though I liked your point about the media, Cy. Imagine if this was a story about a veterinarian who kept the remains of 2,000 dogs he had euthanized on his property. It'd be on every major news outlet. It would be, the point would be,
that's a very good point.
It would be a freak of the week story. That everyone would be like, right. Hey, look at this freak of the week.
Or what if it was endangered animals? That would be, coverage would be endless.
Oh, that would be endless. But even if it were just a veterinarian in Indiana kept the remains of 2,000 dogs he had euthanized on his property, people would be aghast at that. But yet anything where abortion comes up, we see the justifications and the semantic gymnastics engage, because people can't point out this is how gruesome this is, because, well, if it involves human beings, one is too many. This should not happen. Though if you disagree, I'm happy to dialogue with you about your disagreement. I do that all the time on my podcast. I had two full-length dialogues with pro-choice advocates, actually, on this very subject at trenhornpodcast.com. You can check that out there. But to me, I think that these kinds of things expose the dark underbelly of abortion that we all need to have a serious talk about.
888-318-7884 is the number if you'd like to talk with us about it. 888-318-7884. We're looking for folks who identify as pro-choice, whether you are pro-choice only in, I don't know, the first few weeks of the life of the child, or if you're pro-choice all the way through a pregnancy, you are welcome to call. 888-318-7884. There's something chilling about this revelation about this doctor, because this has the quality of keeping trophies.
Yeah.
And we saw this with the serial killer.
Gosnell.
Emmett Gosnell.
Kermit Gosnell. Which there was another media blackout on Gosnell, who knows how many children were born alive in his abortion facility, that he subsequently killed them on the operating table. And it was something that was simply glossed over. And you see this time and time and time again in municipalities. There will be abortion providers who run substandard facilities who literally get away with murder because the local authorities, even if they're pro-choice, they don't want to touch them because they don't want to look like that they're infringing on a woman's right to choose. So they can't even enforce basic health code violations against these individuals. And you look at Gosnell, for example. The reason that Gosnell had not been shut down, the reason they brought him in the first place was for prescription drug fraud. That was what ultimately brought him down, not his substandard operations at his clinic.
Yeah.
And you see in the grand jury report that it was a pro-choice governor, Tom Ridge, Republican, by the way, who was in charge during that time, who chose not to follow up with anything on Gosnell because he didn't want to look like he was infringing on abortion rights. And I've heard local reports from pro-life advocates who try to report things that they find suspicious, building code violations, health code violations, and swept under the rug because at the end of the day, it's politics, and it's gruesome.
Yeah. 888-318-7884, the number. Let's start with Nate in Dallas, Texas, watching on YouTube Live. Nate, delighted to have you with us. Why are you pro-choice? Oh, I'm sorry, Nate. Go ahead, Nate. Why are you pro-choice?
Hey, gentlemen. Good afternoon. I'm pro-choice because I don't think that it's a person at conception, and I think that I'm in good company because using reason, the famous church doctor Aquinas also believed in delayed ensoulment, and he believed it so he advocated for it so strongly that the Catechism of Trent also agreed that Jesus was the only person ever to have a soul at conception. So if it was moral then to believe that, I think it's moral and reasonable to conclude that now.
Did Thomas Aquinas think that abortion was okay?
He thought that it was not a person yet because he thought it didn't have a soul until, I think it was 40 days for a male and 80 days for a female.
That's not my question. My question is, did Thomas Aquinas think that abortion was okay or not wrong?
I don't know what he said on abortion. I don't know what he said on contraception. I do know that he said it was not a person.
Okay, well, what I'll say is that in the tradition of church history, in the 2,000-year tradition of church history, abortion has always been condemned, always by every church father, by every saint, every ecclesial writer, always has been condemned. And for them, it did not matter at what point when the soul entered the body. For example, St. Basil the Great in the 4th century said, "The woman who purposely destroys her unborn child is guilty of murder. With us, there is no nice inquiry as to its being formed or unformed." So it does. So you're putting a moral framework on here that Aquinas and others didn't follow. None of them were ever in favor of abortion, though there were questions about ensoulment. And the church does not have an explicit teaching about when the soul enters the human body. However, that's not the basis for the church's opposition to abortion. The church opposes abortion today by simply saying that we know from scientific inquiry the unborn is a human being, and we shouldn't kill innocent human beings. and that's sufficient. I would say that Thomas Aquinas would agree today that if it could be shown the unborn is a rational, has a body that belongs to a rational species, i.e. that it has a human body with a human rational nature, he would also be opposed to abortion. That Aquinas believed in delayed ensoulment because he believed in delayed animation. He thought that in the womb, you started out as a vegetable body, then an animal body, then you became a rational body later on. But modern biology shows you're a human body through the whole process. So do you think that we should follow modern science and affirm that the unborn from conception on is an individual member of the human species?
No, I don't think so, for other reasons besides that. But just when it comes to personhood, I think that Thomas Aquinas is right that it's not yet a person.
Why do you think Aquinas is right?
I think it's right because it is not yet a sentient being, and it's not what's it called? Viable.
It's not viable. So you think that person, so would you agree then that the unborn from conception onward is alive and has human DNA?
I would say that it is in possession of human DNA, yes.
Is it growing? Is it alive?
No more alive than the components were before, which were the sperm and the egg.
Okay, so it's alive. It's just as alive as sperm and egg, and it has human DNA. Is it a whole organism that's developing? It's a individual member of a species?
Eventually it is, but it's in pieces. It's in parts.
Are you in parts?
I am a whole that is made of all of the parts.
Well, why isn't that same?
It is.
Wouldn't that also be true of a human embryo or a human fetus? It contains parts and it's growing and developing like you or I.
Right. So when I was a single cell zygote, I also wasn't a person.
Okay, but there was a human body there. So you're saying that personhood begins when the embryo is sentient?
Yes.
Okay, how do you define sentience?
Capable of some type of rational responses due to external inputs.
Well, a rational response or just a response? Well, we might have to go to a break here soon, but I would enjoy keeping you on just a little bit longer, Nate, if that is possible.
Sure.
Would you be able to do that? Let's just get our terms right before we move forward. There's a rational response or a physical response. For example, a pigeon feels pain, but it doesn't have rational responses. It has no rational thought, right?
A what?
Excuse me?
A what?
A pigeon. Or a rat.
I would think that it has a rational response to feeling pain.
It has the capacity to use reason?
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, you can teach it things. You can learn to avoid things and overcome those things later so it can override its previous learnings.
So are rats and pigeon persons that have a right to life?
I think they deserve not to be killed for just any reason.
If someone kills a rat because they've infested their home, are they guilty of murder?
They're guilty of killing an innocent entity.
Have they killed
because murder is defined by.
I'm just asking you, did they kill a person?
No, they didn't kill a person.
I thought you said that having rational. I thought you said having rational responses is what makes you a person.
No, that's one of the criteria. I didn't mean to pigeonhole myself by saying that is the only requirement.
Sure. Well, we've reached thus far. Let's take a quick break here, and then we'll reconvene shortly. Though we have a lot of other callers after this, but I want to put a little bow on this.
Okay, we'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Why Are You Pro-Choice with Trent Horn and with anybody who's pro-choice who's willing to call right after this.
Why are you pro-choice? Call now. Trent is waiting to talk to you.
The leading Catholic voices are on EWTN Radio.
I'm really a revert. There are a lot of converts on Catholic radio, a lot of reverts, those who have come back to the faith. And ever since I came back to a practice of my faith, I started praying the rosary, going to even daily mass, God has led me on an amazing journey and used me in a lot of incredible ways that I never dreamed would have been possible.
Take Two with Jerry and Debbie, tonight, midnight Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
The Aquinas Writing Advantage Program is part of Homeschool Connections' set of online courses for your Catholic homeschool. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Trent Horn is our guest, and it's Why Are You Pro-Choice Today? If you are a pro-choice person, you are welcome to call. Thank you so much for those who have already called and are waiting on the line. We want to give everybody a chance to fully explore their beliefs with us, so thanks for your patience. 888-318-7884 is the number. There are two lines open right now. We are in the middle of a conversation with Nate down in Texas, and take it away, Trent Horn.
Sure. So Nate and I were discussing about whether the unborn are persons. We started with Thomas Aquinas, but I think now we're moving more into philosophical criteria. So Nate, I want to just boil down what your understanding of what a person is. A person is not just something that has rational responses, though, I mean, would you agree there's a difference between an animal that can respond to pain and one that can use reason, like logically think through things? Like, there's a difference between a fish and a dolphin in their thinking capacities.
Well, there's higher level fish and lower level fish. There's jellyfish and anemones.
Right.
They all seem to respond to physical touch and withdraw from some sense of danger. So
right, but there's a difference between creatures that have the use of reason and those that don't.
Well, I mean, if it's really hard to even define what reason is, because, you know, slime molds can solve mazes. They can trees can find the water that's hidden beneath a layer of rock. So it's really, really difficult to say this is not reason, this is reason,
well, one thing,
when they solve puzzles.
Well, one thing is, now, I think only human beings have the use of reason, but some biologists will use things like the mirror test, the ability to identify oneself in a mirror is something indicative of higher order cognitive faculties than lower order ones. But let's just, whatever it is, we'll just talk about rational response and pain. We'll just use sentience as a catch-all word here. You say a person is something that's sentient, but I said if somebody kills a rat, and rats are sentient, they solve mazes, you said they're not killing a person because it's more than just sentience. So along with sentience, what do you need to be a person?
Off the top of my head, I would have to say that you need the ability to live somewhat on your own outside of another organism.
Okay, so rats.
Life support would still keep you a person.
Okay.
And you need all the... So
rats can live on their own without other help. They infest places. So under your definition, rats are still people.
Well, I was getting there. You could also need human DNA to be human.
Let me stop you right there. Human DNA to be human, but do you need human DNA to be a person?
No. Actually, my mind is kind of flipping on that because I can't quite grasp the terms right now. I got stuff on my mind.
Okay.
You need to be a person.
I'm trying.
Yes, I think you do.
Okay. Why?
Because we draw the line at what is ourselves, and we say, I can't breed with that rock. I can't breed with that bird. We must be completely different species.
Right.
So I need similar chromosomes and DNA.
That only shows you what belongs to a species, though. Because, for example, there could be intelligent aliens out there who think, just like us, that we can't breed with. Would they be persons?
No, they would be different. I guess for the purposes of this argument, they have personhood, but it's hard for me to say that they are persons because I haven't entertained that notion.
Okay, well, here's the thing. So your definition of a person is, it seems to me, your definition of a person is any human being that's not a fetus.
No, I mean, because I believe, like, the day before they are a person, the day before they're born, 2 weeks before they're born, they're a person. So I think that there is some arbitrary cutoff.
Why?
Not up to me to set the rules at.
No, but you just did. You said 2 weeks before they're born.
Because they're viable.
Because they can. Okay, so okay. Then I'll rephrase it. A person for you is any human being that can live outside of a uterus. And here's my definition. A person is any human being. Why is your definition preferable to mine?
Because yours is ambiguous with human being.
No,
we haven't nailed that down yet.
Here, human being. Right. A human being is an individual member of the species Homo sapiens.
Based on
what?
Based on DNA, based on respiration, based on heartbeat.
Based on being a functioning organism that has human DNA. Yeah. Any biologist
That would qualify cancer cells, that would qualify HeLa cells.
Cancer cells and HeLa cells are not.
Qualify
they're not organisms, though.
Cells inside my cheek for a limited amount of time.
What is an organism?
An organism is a cell or collection of cells that perform all the necessary mechanics for life. Mm-hmm. They consume, they respirate, they turn food into energy, and mm-hmm. usually they excrete.
Okay. Do fetuses do that?
Yes.
So then fetuses are organisms?
Yes, fetuses are organisms.
They're human. Then they're
as much as a sperm and an egg are.
Sperm and egg are not organisms. They're organs. They're sex cells.
All of the cells in your body are organisms.
I would highly recommend that you go check out a biology textbook because by that, if you say every single cell is an organism, then that would mean every organism is made up of millions of other organisms, which is biologically untrue. And I'll just leave it to our listeners to decide whose view is more rational. The idea that every human being should have a right to life and is a person, or just that every human being who can live outside of the uterus can. I think one definition is rational and consistent, and the other is self-serving and biased against the unborn. But I'll leave that to our listeners to decide.
Nate, thank you very, very much for your call. Why are you pro-choice is the question of the hour. If you're a pro-choice person, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. We go now to David in Alabama. David, why are you pro-choice?
Okay, well, hello. I mean, it's just logic. I mean, apparently everybody tells me the United States started out, it was a Christian nation. Well, they wiped out the Indians because they were in their place and they didn't have them. They want to exterminate other Indians and just kill them because they're in the way. The same thing today. It's Christian. If the lady don't want it in the way, they kill it.
Okay, David, let me ask you a quick question. So you believe it was wrong to exterminate Native Americans?
Then Constantine came in and said, hey, if you practice Jewish traditions, then we're going to kill you.
David, let's go back. All right, David, yes or no? It is wrong to kill Native Americans just because of where they live. It's wrong. Do you agree?
The Christians did it.
Okay, so yes. It's wrong. Okay, then by that logic, it is wrong to kill unborn babies because of where they live. Would you agree with that?
That's it. Well, these priests that rape kids...
I think we're gonna have to let David go because
I have to say though we had to let David go because of it was unpredictable. Let's say about what was being said, but the argument, the basic underlying argument is that Christians don't have a clear moral high ground here because Christians misbehave constantly, including having killed thousands and thousands of Native American people.
But it doesn't make sense logically to say that. Some Christians have engaged in immoral behavior. Therefore, it follows that any Christian can engage in immoral behavior. That doesn't make sense at all. We wouldn't say some people have done evil things. Therefore, it is okay for anyone. Someone has done an evil deed. therefore anyone can do an evil deed. That doesn't follow at all. There have been Christians who have failed to live up to the name of Christ, and there are other Christians who bravely defended Native Americans, defended those who were enslaved, fought for the rights of women, fought for women to not be thrown on funeral pyres in India, for example, or victims of ritual honor killing in other places. So, so there have been Christians who have acted heroically and some who have acted villainously. But the presence of villains does not negate our obligation to be heroes by any sense of the word. So I would have enjoyed talking to David more, but unfortunately, as my mom would say, he was on doing a monologue and on broadcast, and we want to be on a dialogue. We don't want a monologue. We want a dialogue on this show.
But we are doing a broadcast.
So we are on broadcast. We're broadcasting dialogue. Two people talking to each other, not at each other.
Right. And if you want to just yell at us about all the bad things Catholics have done, I'll have to do that another day. It's Why Are You Pro-Choice today on Catholic Answers Live.
Hello, this is Bishop Jeffrey Monfort, Bishop of the Diocese of Steubenville. Make sure you keep it on Catholic Answers Live. God bless you.
Everybody's favorite Catholic outer space delivery pilots return for their greatest adventure yet in the brand new graphic novel Weapons of War. Fresh from saving the solar system in The Truth Is Out There and saving the timeline of salvation history in The Big Picture, Brendan and Irk land in a magnificent domed city on Mars for what is supposed to be a simple shuttle job. But soon they find themselves caught up in a sinister assault on faith and freedom. Will Mars be lost to the enemy? Brendan and Irk's only hope for the flight is in the power of God's sacramental gifts. A totally new kind of Catholic resource for apologetics and evangelization, The Truth Is Out There series combines the visual excitement and quirky humor of graphic novels with solid popular philosophy and theology. The result is a series in which everyone from teens to adults can find accessible answers to questions about God, the soul, true happiness, and much more. Order your copy of Weapons of War today by calling 844-239-4952, by visiting shop.catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Have you subscribed to the Catholic Answers Radio Club newsletter? This is Catholic Answers Live host Cy Kellett, and I want to tell you about our new weekly newsletter full of behind-the-scenes information and facts you need to know about the show. It's easy to sign up. Just visit CatholicAnswersLive.com and look for the newsletter sign-up box on the front of the page. It's a great way to keep up to date with what's happening with the show and see what's coming in the days ahead, delivered weekly into your inbox. Sign up today for the Catholic Answers Radio Club newsletter and see what you've been missing. Go to CatholicAnswersLive.com. I know all you pro-life people are holding back because we asked you not to call this hour because we've opened the lines to pro-choice folks, and I thank you for your restraint. I know that there are very many wise and wonderful pro-life people who would like to add their two cents, but Trent can handle it, and we do want to give our pro-choice friends, family members, neighbors, acquaintances, and fellow citizens a chance to call in and tell us why they are pro-choice. Why are you pro-choice is the topic this hour. 888-318-7884 is the number. And up next is Randy in Alberta, Canada. Randy, why are you pro-choice? Hi, Randy.
Did we lose Randy?
Sometimes it's the fact that I push the wrong button, but it is not this time, so I don't know if we have a bad connection to Canada.
Well, I would love to speak with Randy, because actually I think Randy and I have spoken several times
On
this issue, and one more go-around couldn't hurt, I guess.
Well, let's go to Betsy in Baltimore.
We'll see if Randy comes back.
Randy, don't give up. We'll come back to you if you're listening on the radio while you're washing the dishes or something. Betsy in Baltimore, Maryland, you are next. Betsy, why are you pro-choice?
Good evening, gentlemen. It's great that you took my call. Can you hear me okay?
We can. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Great. I'm a cradle Catholic, born and raised, Catholic schools, Catholic all my life. Mm-hmm. Some on and off in my adult years, but definitely on as I've gotten older. I'm also a single mother of a severely disabled child who came into the world, and it's been a hard life. been a very difficult life, but he's a true angel, and I'm glad he's here. Mm-hmm. So I have basically three reasons, but keep in mind, gentlemen, this issue is very difficult, and it's very difficult for me.
Okay.
My high school had a very strong pro-life ministry, mm-hmm. and I felt myself sometimes at odds with my classmates because I struggled with some of the concepts. I was raised by a very devout Catholic mother, mm-hmm. daily mass person, who is pro-choice, very firmly pro-choice, and sort of raised me in that belief system. And as an adult, I have...
Well, Betsy, I'm just curious, before we get to your three reasons, do you find a contradiction in going to daily mass, believing that the Catholic Church, I assume, is instituted by Christ himself, is protected by the Holy Spirit to be infallible in its teachings, that are defined to be infallible, to lead us to truth, it gives us the Eucharist, and yet also believing that the Church is just totally wrong on one of its firmest moral teachings, the teaching of abortion? Doesn't that seem a little bit like a contradiction to have so much faith in the Church, but to believe the Church is wrong on this fundamental, one of its most fundamental moral teachings?
Well, I don't believe my mother believes that the Church is wrong, and I certainly don't believe the Church is wrong. I think she believes that it's not the purview of the government. And here's that segues perfectly into the first, if you will, quote, reason.
Okay.
And again, keep in mind that reason ultimately stems from natural law and things like this. And in natural law, life, the hierarchy, life is one of the most fundamental natural rights of every living human being. And I listened to the personhood conversation with Nick or Zach or Nate. And
I think it was Nate, but yeah.
So I found that very interesting. But bottom line is, you know, there are times as human beings when the ideal that we want to go towards, we can't reach. We might want to reach it. We might not want to reach it. We might be unable to reach it. We might be uneducated enough to reach it. And in the case of a woman's right to terminate, my mom is a pediatric nurse, and she saw in the 50s and 60s the horrific results of back alley abortion attempts and the damage, the physical damage on the women to include death and the physical damage on the babies to include death. And she simply feels, as god-awful as an abortion is, if a woman needs to do that as part of her particular life choice, and it is a life choice, it's a medical choice, it's also a moral choice, then there should be a safe place for that to be able to be done.
So, well, Betsy, let me summarize then for you. It sounds like you're saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, you and your mother would agree with the Church's teaching that it is immoral or it is wrong to end the life of a child through abortion, but that the government should keep it legal anyways in order to safeguard the health of women who choose to do this. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I can't speak for my mom, so let's
talk for you. Sure.
I will get yelled at, and I'm in my 50s, so...
That's fine. Let's stick with you, then.
Stick with me, and... because I may be imperfectly summarizing her view, and she's not very open about it. So.
That's fine. Just tell me your
anyway,
view, then. Did I summarize it accurately?
What I would say is that, in my personal view, that abortion is a wrong act if it's on purpose, right? If it's obviously a car accident. But there are times in life, just as there are times that we consider the death penalty is appropriate or we consider pulling the plug is appropriate, because of the reasons going on in that family with that doctor and with that ministry team and whatever else, assuming they have, there are times when we as humans choose death as opposed to murder.
Betsy, let's go back and go through these terms a bit. So you agree abortion is a wrong act. What about abortion makes it a wrong act?
Well, I do believe that the fetus is a life. Mm. It's a life with a soul. It's a life intended by God.
And what does abortion do to that fetus?
It kills it.
Okay, so your view is that abortion is wrong because it kills a human being with an immortal soul. But sometimes it's okay to kill human beings with an immortal soul. And you gave two examples, the death penalty and removing life support systems, a.k.a. pulling the plug. But I would say that those examples do not show it is ever okay to directly kill an innocent person. The death penalty involves the state meting out punishment for a guilty person to protect the common good of society. And in fact, the Catechism has been revised to say that the death penalty is now inadmissible. The state ought not do that because it's an attack on the dignity of the human person. We do no longer need this to promote the common good. When it comes to removing medical care, there are times where a patient's prognosis is hopeless. They are dying. So you can remove extraordinary forms of treatment, such as if they are dying, you might remove their respirator or heart-lung machine. But that wouldn't justify us taking a sick, innocent person and directly killing them by suffocating them or injecting them with morphine. So the church's position is that it is always wrong to directly kill an innocent human being. Would you agree with that statement?
Which statement?
It's always wrong to directly kill an innocent human being.
That's where I disagree. I do not agree that it's always wrong to kill an innocent person.
Give me an example specifically of an innocent human being that's born that we can kill.
That's born that we can kill?
Yes.
That we on purpose choose to kill?
Yes.
Yeah,
so
just war. I'm a soldier. I'm an army person. Just war is a perfectly reasonable, good reason.
Betsy, let me ask you this question. In war, would you be justified in killing every child you found in a daycare in the enemy territory?
That would be against the rules of war. That's the law of land warfare, and that's a war crime punishable by governments, ours and others.
Because you're killing innocent children.
There are times, however, when a bomb will kill children,
right,
and it's not on purpose.
But you can't directly kill children, right?
Say again?
You cannot directly kill an innocent child in war. You can't.
It is not ideal. It is not what, certainly in warfare, it's not what we
Betsy,
try to do.
Would it be a crime for me to take an innocent 5-year-old child and kill him by ripping his arms and legs off with a bunch of military tools? Would that be a crime?
That's incorrect. That is wrong. That would be a wrong act.
Okay, good. Now, Betsy, let's go on. Would it be a crime for me to rip a 5-month-old fetus's body apart with medical instruments?
It depends on the need of the woman and the nature of the situation with that family.
So you think it's okay to dismember children in some circumstances based on the parents' needs?
Well, I think we have to be very careful about how we do. If we're going to do a termination, first of all, the goal is everything but termination, right? Everything but. But we have people that do not follow our moral systems, right? So it's not. So we have to, in terms of a person considering it, their health care need, and so far, societal laws have not said that that's not true, then that health care need has to be able to be done in a sterile, safe way that causes as minimal pain to the fetus and as minimal discomfort to the mother. And is it ideal? No. Well, but here's my thing, Trent. I'm a mother of a severely disabled child, as I mentioned.
Right.
And we claim...
And you're a hero for caring for that child.
Claims, and our church claims to be all pro-life and all this, mm-hmm. all this, right? And I'm all for that.
Okay.
But as a single mother of a disabled child, and dad walked away. It's not like I had a baby out of wedlock and all this kind of stuff.
I'm sorry to hear
dad
that.
Dad didn't want to deal with it. So...
I'm sorry to hear that.
Here's the thing. I have scraped and struggled to get every single service to the point of having emotional breakdowns, going into exorbitant debt.
Mm-hmm.
Now my son is, thankfully, God, thanks be to a lot of prayer and intercession, is now in a group home. He's in an adult services program. He's 21 years old. He's a gift to the universe, and it's great that he's here and that all that happened.
Betsy, let me ask you a question, Betsy. Is every child that God creates as beautiful and valuable as your child?
Every at-risk youth, every elderly person suffering from Alzheimer's, and an adoption center for free prenatal care and free adoption.
Betsy, no, come on. Stop for a second. I need you to just stop. Just stop, please, for a second. It's a simple question. So hold on. Is every child in the womb, because you're a hero in my eyes, you're doing everything you can right by your child, and that's a beautiful thing. But there's a disconnect for me. Is every child in the womb as valuable as your child?
As far as as I'm concerned, every child who has made it to birth and taken that first breath is a viable child. Is it a life form, a human life form inside the womb? Yes, it is. But, you know, there's a great...
But
many people who feel have a certain feeling, and we don't like the word feeling, right? When we're talking about reason, right?
But you know, Betsy, how would you feel if somebody said that your child, who has physical disabilities, is not viable because they can't do what you and I do? If your child has the same dignity as everyone else, regardless of their physical abilities, why wouldn't we say the same for the unborn? Why wouldn't we treat them with the same dignity as your child?
If a mother feels that she absolutely, even after counseling and talking with people and talking with adoption people, and she still feels she has to terminate, there's nothing in our Constitution, that currently in our jurisprudence, that prevents her from doing that. And I think that if that's the case, we can't go back to the days when women are stuck with no other option.
So, all right, Betsy, I'm going to have to summarize then your position, and I'm going to let our listeners judge it for them. And you can tell me if I'm wrong, but I think this is your summary. We should make it legal for bigger people to kill smaller people so that it is safer for the bigger people. Isn't that what you're arguing for?
That the man can get away with no one else knowing that they had sex.
I think we're going to have to move on, because once again, and this is unfortunate that as you see, there are heated emotions on this issue, but we need to have a dialogue. We need to have a dialogue. And I really do praise Betsy for caring for her own child and seeing what's important to do what's right, but then completely throwing those principles to the wind when it comes to everyone else's child. So I hope our listeners can see that there were good things in her worldview. We just ought to apply them equally to everybody and do what we can to care for the lives of all human beings.
Betsy, thank you very, very much for the call. If you are a pro-choice person and you would like to call and tell us why you are pro-choice, that is our topic this hour. Why are you pro-choice? 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. And by the way, Trent's got another Trent Tracks out. It's called The Deity of Christ. In there, I believe that you claim that Jesus is God.
I do, and I show you in an hour how to defend that from Scripture and answer misinterpretations of those Scriptures offered by people like Jehovah's Witnesses, other critics of the Bible. So how to defend the deity of Christ and marshal the biblical evidence. You'll want to check that out. It's a Trent Track, and it's also available to our silver level subscribers for free at TrentHornPodcast.com.
But you can get it for 99 cents, too, for the next 24 hours. Did you know that? They put it on sale.
Just for 24 hours.
24
check it out
hours.
Today at where?
Shop.Catholic.com. You can get Trent Horn's new Trent Tracks, The Deity of Christ, available now, 24 hours, 99 cents at shop.catholic.com.
Bringing you the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
We have a big problem. Our culture is dying, and souls are in danger of being lost. The answer is conversion to Jesus Christ in His church. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a Catholic organization, and we have hundreds of teams spreading the good news throughout the country. But we need your help. The harvest is great, but the laborers are few. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Hey Alexa, how many ways can I get EWTN?
You can get EWTN on television, via cable and satellite, on Apple TV, Roku, Amazon Fire, and Google Play. You can get EWTN radio in your car, on Sirius XM Channel 130, and on the go, on any mobile device with the EWTN app. And here's the best news. Now you can get EWTN's great programming on me.
Everybody getting ready for the Catholic Answers Conference later in the week around here. I saw Nick and Darren packing up the equipment today. Is that what you guys are doing, or are you stealing stuff? Which is it? Oh, both. You're getting both things done on one day. Multitaskers. Good for you. Because the conference starts Thursday this week, and we'll all be over there. We'll be broadcasting two shows from there, so join us Thursday and Friday for broadcasts with Trent and Jimmy and Tim and Bishop Frank Caggiano and Father Dave McConey and Monsignor Morris, and there's probably somebody else I'm leaving out. Right now, our topic, why are you pro-choice? If you are a pro-choice person, you are welcome to call 888-318-7884. As a matter of fact, I'll say we're grateful if you're willing to call, because we like to have these conversations with pro-choice folks about why you have chosen the pro-choice position. 888-318-7884. Up next is Damien in Austin, Texas, watching on YouTube Live. I just want to let you know, Trent, I didn't get rid of the guy from Canada. The line just went dead. So
maybe we'll catch him on another show.
Canadians are welcome to call to 888-318-7884. Damien, why are you pro-choice?
Hi, everybody. Hi, Trent. This is Damien here. I'm pro-choice because it comes down to a hierarchy of rights that we grant human beings. I grant that a fetus is a human being genetically, and just like everybody else is. It's just that we seem to be swapping the rights of bodily autonomy over the right to life when they're not born. And then once they're born, then we flip it back to what everybody else has those rights to be. And the example that I gave last time that we talked was, say, if a father causes a car accident and his child now needs a kidney, mm-hmm. the father can't be forced to give up a kidney to save the life of his child. But a woman has to be forced to give up the use of her uterus to keep the child alive. And correct me if I'm wrong here, but I believe you responded with the idea that what an organ is naturally designed to do is what supersedes someone's choice on what they choose to do with that organ. And that was your response. Correct me if I'm wrong there, but I believe that's what you summarized there. And what we consent to do with our body is irrelevant to what that body's part is naturally designed to do. We have to consent to what we want to use our bodies for, not what they're naturally designed to do.
What I would say here is that example as an analogy to pregnancy is not a good analogy because it's disanalogous in a variety of ways. First, there's a variety of disanalogies here. Number one, there is no natural connection between driving a car and then someone being dependent on my body. So no natural responsibility arises out of that. That's just something because of modern medical technology allows us to donate organs. There's no natural connection there. But it makes sense that if people engage in sexual union, that is naturally ordered towards creating helpless human beings, and they therefore incur a natural responsibility to the child that's created. That's why fathers have a responsibility to pay child support, even if they no longer want a child. And mothers have an obligation to care for these children. That's the difference, number one. There's no link or natural responsibility causal nexus there. Number two, the case of refusing to donate a kidney to save someone's life is a case of refusing to save someone. If I refuse, we knew it would come up eventually. If Cy is in a car accident and he needs my kidney, and I refuse to give him my kidney.
No.
I have not killed Cy.
No.
I haven't killed you. No. I have failed
you
to
wanted
save.
To.
I have failed to save your life. Mm-hmm. But the fatal sequence of events began with the car accident, and so I would say with abortion, the fatal sequence of events for the fetus begins when the abortion occurs. Abortion is not withholding an organ, allowing a sick person to die, it's actively killing a healthy person. What do you think of that difference?
A couple of things there. The difference is that, so you're saying that if we remove a fetus from being connected to somebody, they will naturally continue on living?
No, what I'm saying is the fetus is healthy. The unborn child is a healthy human being residing in the place where it's supposed to, in his mother's womb. The fatal sequence of events for the child begins when you abort him or her. So abortion is not failing to save someone, as in the case if I don't give a kidney to Cy Kellett. Rather, it's more like taking Cy Kellett and putting a weight around him and throwing him into the bottom of the ocean. I take him from an environment where he can live, and I put him in an environment where he'll die. That's more what abortion is, and that's why it's wrong.
Yeah, sorry, Cy, that we keep killing you off there.
I noticed that you haven't killed me yet. It's been Trent who's been doing all the killing.
Well, I look around and you're the first person I see for the thought experiment.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But do you see the difference between refusing to save and directly killing?
Yeah. Yes. There is an obvious difference there, but also there's the understanding that what I was presenting before is that being genetically related to somebody doesn't make you a parent. You have to assume the role of parent. And if you don't assume the role of parent, this is now, yes, it's a child that needs a woman to care for it to live, but she's opting to say, I will care for this child, not at the expense of my body.
Well, Damien, that seems like an odd statement to me. Let me ask you a question. Have you heard of women who give birth and they didn't know they were pregnant? It does happen. I mean, it happens.
Yes, that does happen, yeah.
Okay, so let's say a woman gives birth in a rural field. She's out walking in the wilderness and she gives birth and she had no idea she was pregnant. If she does not assume parental role for that child, could she be free to just walk away from that child and let him or her die?
Okay, now we're going back to this scenario of the island and that you were giving before of if a woman is on an island, is she obligated to breastfeed this child to keep it alive?
Well, it's similar.
And I argue the point that since we give grant rights to fetuses the same way that we grant to any human being, regardless of the age of the person, would an adult be able to force a woman to breastfeed them to keep them alive on that island? You cannot force somebody to use their body to save you.
No, but let's move it. Let's move it along. No. Let's go back though to the example. So it sounds like what you're saying then is, if no human being has a right to any other human being's body, then it would follow that women could starve their infants to death since they don't have an obligation to breastfeed them, even if that's the only means to keep the child alive. Is that, it sounds like you're biting the bullet and just conceding infanticide by deprivation in that case.
We do have obligations to each other, but not at the extent of using your body to save that person.
So
that's where we can draw a line.
I want to make sure you're clear. So in the case of where breastfeeding is the only means to sustain the life of an infant, if a mother chooses to not breastfeed that child, you're saying it's not wrong.
I'm saying it is a moral wrong. I agree that if there's something that you can do, I personally
it's,
would it,
it's
do
not,
it.
It's not murder, though.
But I can't legally force her to do it. There's a difference between a moral issue and a legal issue.
Okay, so it would not be, a mother could not be held legally responsible because she chose to not breastfeed her child when that was the only way to keep the child alive.
That is where we are drawing the line for the legality of this issue. I still believe it would be an immoral issue.
Oh,
but
okay.
Legally, that is where we're drawing the hard line in the sand.
Okay.
Yes, you can find any moral example to give it an extreme that makes it completely absurd that someone wouldn't do that because we're naturally compassionate human beings. But legally, we cannot force somebody to use their body to save someone else's life. Otherwise, go back to my example of the car accident. I should be able to force all men to give up their body.
Well, why can't I just put it this principle? Human beings have an obligation to use the natural use of their organs to sustain the lives of their children. I think that makes sense because for me, that would explain the common moral intuition of why a mother should be held responsible to breastfeed her child if that is the only means to keep the child alive. And so if that principle succeeds, it would show you have an obligation to care for the child during pregnancy as well. So I think that's a sound moral principle. There's no reason to reject it.
Okay, then I should be able to legally force you to give up your blood to save your child. I should be able to force all fathers to give up their bodily rights to save their child because born or unborn should be irrelevant.
Okay, and to me that turns on the natural use of organs. My blood is made for my body. Breast milk is not made for the mother's body. It's made for a child. The uterus is not made for the mother. It's made to sustain the life of a child. And a child has a natural right to the use of that organ to sustain his or her life. Otherwise, we have a human being who really has no meaningful right to life at all. But thank you for the discussion.
Thanks, Damien. We will take a break, but we will be back with Trent for another hour if you are a pro-choice person. By the way, those of you who are online, you can just stay on the line. We will get to you as quick as we can when we come back. But we do want to give pro-choice people a chance to express their views. Why are you pro-choice is our topic today. The number is 888-318-8255. 888-784-3818.